And in the age of iPhone and social media, it's become more and more a part of people's routines to stay up at night staring at screens, checking Twitter feeds or Instagram or whatever have you, reading articles, who knows, anything. Naturally, it feels like we wake up more and more tired each morning when we do this, as it affects the quality of our sleep. But our next guest hopes to change the way that we sleep. I'm joined now by Dr. Carmel Harrington, Managing Director of Sleep for Health and Research Fellow at Westmead Hospital, discussing how we can get a good night's sleep. Thank you very much for joining us this morning.
Good morning, Sam. How are you?
I'm very good. How much sleep does the average adult get or need each night, rather?
Well, what they need is appears to be quite different to what they're getting. And an average adult needs somewhere between 7 to 9 hours. It is an individual measure. So some people need 7.5 and other people need 8.5. There is a short sleep gene, and about 3% of the population have that. And they only need about 5 hours to get done what they need to do in sleep and what takes us much longer. And there's a long sleep gene, so about 3% of the population require 9 or more hours.
And so we need about, you know, that 8 hour rule, does that kind of stay constant for, you know, our whole lifetime, or does it change as we age?
Well, age really affects how much we need to sleep. We only have to look at a newborn baby who sleeps, you know, between 16 to 18 hours a day. But our requirements as adults from about the age of 20 onwards remain pretty much constant, that 7 to 9 hours, well into old age. And if people are having trouble sleeping when they're older, they often put it down to the fact, oh, I don't need as much sleep when I'm older. Well, that's not quite correct. And well into our old age, as I say, we need a good amount of sleep. So if one of your listeners is having problems sleeping and they're older, they really need to talk to their doctor about that.
Now, something I've always wondered is it when you're sleeping, you know, you might have been asleep for 8 hours nominally, but is it possible that that 8 hours of sleep wasn't worth as much as it should be? Like you had, you know, poor sleep or something like that? Or is it any sleep is good sleep?
Well, all sleep's not the same. And people think sleep is a unitary state, but in fact it isn't. And we have two different types of sleep. There's rapid eye movement sleep or dream sleep, and there's non-rapid eye movement sleep. And non-rapid eye movement sleep is divided into light sleep and deep sleep. Now, one of the things, and each of those states, they're called neurobehavioral states. Each one of those, we perform particular and specific physiological and biological processes that we can't do in the other states. So when we're awake, for example, we exercise and we eat and we get rid of our waste products. Well, in a similar way, when we're in dream sleep, we're doing very definite cognitive functions, and while we're in deep sleep, we have very definite and specific physiological functions. So we're keeping our body, we're repairing and restoring and resting different parts of our nervous system and our hormonal system and things like that. So when we don't, you know how sometimes you feel like you haven't had a good night's sleep and you're always waking up?
Yeah.
So that's when we stay in light sleep a lot. And so lots of things can influence that. So
it's like the restless night.
The restless night. And when we have a lot of light sleep, we're not getting enough of our dream sleep or our deep sleep. Mm-hmm. So that can be affected by a new environment. So often when people are in a hotel room for the first night, they have what they think is, you know, they hardly slept. Chances are they did sleep, but they stayed pretty much in light sleep. Mm-hmm.
Okay. So, you know, what can we do then, you know, to set ourselves up before bed for the best night's sleep possible? We often hear about things like, you know, avoid screens for like an hour and you know, make sure you don't, you know, do stimulating stuff too close to bedtime. What's the kind of best way we can approach it?
Well, you know, it's good old wives' tales, you know, we have to start to relax and to bring down our alert pathway so that we can allow our body to feel comfortable and ready to go to sleep. So the idea of switching off that 1 hour beforehand is really important. One of the things we need to do is surround ourselves by dim light, fading light, so that our body registers that it's time to go to sleep and starts producing the wonderful hormone melatonin. We also need to make sure that warm to hot shower in that hour before bedtime works really well, and maybe a relaxation exercise. The thing is, though, what people often don't realize is how we spend our wakeful hours affects how we can sleep, and how we sleep affects our wakeful hours. So what we do during the day really affects our ability to sleep at night. So if you're having coffee too late in the day or caffeine in any of its forms, if you're not exercising regularly, if you've got a very variable wake-up time, things like that really affects your ability to get to sleep that night. So starting your day off well, waking up at the same time, you know, every day as much as possible, watching what you eat, have whole foods, because vitamins and minerals are really essential to our ability to produce our melatonin, and exercising regularly is important.
Now, is this sort of, you know, bad sleep and poor sleeping patterns seems to be very widespread these days. Is it like a new or more widespread problem than it used to be, or is it just something that we hear more about because of how interconnected the world is?
Oh, no, it's certainly getting worse. And we know in the 1960s, our grandparents slept an average sleep time about 8.5 hours. And now the average sleep time for the working adult is about 6.8. So we're definitely getting worse at sleeping. And one of the things, I often equate this to our, you know, a situation we had with food or exercise in the 1970s. We had in Australia a life norm be in it campaign, because people had forgotten that incidental exercise was really important, because all of this, you know, 10 years beforehand, everyone was buying cars, and so we lost incidental exercise. And then, you know, about 10 years on, we had norm the more or less diet, because about 10 years before that, the rise of the fast food and the supermarket. So we could do whatever with food that we liked. And the same way, in the last 10 years, that the use of screens and computers that you spoke about has become so intricate, and we can extend our day as long as possible. We can be doing shopping at 3 o'clock in the morning. Our grandparents couldn't do that. And so we've lost discipline around our sleep.
Right.
So we have to put the discipline back in.
Now, Carmel, you run a sleep boot camp. Can you tell us a bit about that?
The sleep boot camp is just to rejig people's understanding of sleep and how they can give it to themselves, because often we've lost our way. So it's just a matter of actually looking at what people are doing during the day and what's happening with them at night, and changing their lifestyle a little bit. It takes probably about 3 weeks for sleep patterns and things to start taking effect. So that's what we try to do.
Okay. Well, thank you so much for joining us this morning to talk about it.
It's my pleasure, Sam. Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. And that was Dr. Carmel Harrington, a research fellow at Westmead Children's Hospital and managing director of Sleep for Health. Now, Dr. Harrington is also working to raise awareness of SIDS, sudden infant death syndrome, with the My Cause campaign, Damien's Legacy. You can find out more about this and where to donate if you're interested in finding out more on the 2SER website.